The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, everyone. I'm Summer McKean, a content creator and best sister of the year.
Hi, I'm her sister Bree. I'm actually a 10-time winner of that award. Together, we are the hosts of the podcast, Wavy.
Okay. Every Wednesday, we bring you into the fun, exciting, hopefully helpful, and mostly chaotic world of our sisterly chats about everything and anything.
From living in a world of comparisons, to boy drama, to the life changes that feel really overwhelming, we got your back.
So please, support the show with a like and follow to keep up with all of our latest sister shenanigans.
Get Wavy on Wednesdays.
We'll see you soon.
Hey guys, welcome to Who's On Content, a show that explores and dissects the influential, behavioral-altering power of content through thought-provoking, culturally relevant, and industry-shifting dialogues. I'm your host, of course, EJ, Head of Special Projects at DBA, and I'm so fucking excited for you to join me on this journey of getting to know the innovative leaders and creators in our insanely addictive industry of content marketing. I mean, if content is the only influencer of behavior, we might as well figure out who's on content. Let's get into it.
Hey, hey. Welcome back to another episode of Who's on Content. And I know this week everyone is home, hopefully enjoying family, friends, and just getting ready for the rest of the holiday season. And the beauty about content around this time of year is that people provide their interpretations of what family time is like, or what being around friends are like. And really, it feels that the content is rooted in something that we can all appreciate, which is fellowship and community. And so I really love seeing people's low vibrational plate photos, because there are tons of plate photos on the internet during holiday time. But then I also just love to see people's family traditions and how those traditions inform and enrich people's lives. And one person that believes in the power of storytelling rooted in community is Madison U. Tennandale. Madison U. Tennandale is first and foremost a storyteller. Beyond that, she is a speaker, producer, video host, and the founder of U. Tennandale Creative, the all-female, Black-owned, anti-trend branding and design agency behind cutting-edge brands like Simon Hux Judy, Halsey's About Face, and Lena Dunham's Good Thing Going, a Forbes 30 Under 30 recipient and a two-time Webb Award winner. Madison has been on the founding teams of cultural phenomena such as Last Week with John Oliver, Refinery 29's 29 Rooms, and Museum of Ice Cream. While the experience of being behind these massive cultural successes led to a specialty and expertise in emotional brand storytelling, it also led to Madison's firsthand experience with burnout. Since then, she not only discovered the power of authenticity and self-worth within the workplace on an individual level, but is fundamentally changing the way creatives work via leadership and policy at her agency. Madison has been invited to speak at Inbound, VidCon, Yelp's Women in Business Summit, and many more. When Madison is not playing boss at U. Tennandale Creative, she can be found as an on-camera video host and creator of two original Instagram series, The Elephant and Her Name Is. Madison, of course, is NYC-based. She has a dog named Lou and a cat, Izzy. And I cannot wait to get into this amazing conversation that Madison and I have around the power of understanding that you have agency to create boundaries and that burnout is a choice. And really that if we create content that is rooted in something, especially community and representation, it'll go further than any viral video ever could. I hope everyone is having a great holiday, and I hope you truly, truly, truly enjoy this conversation I had with Madison.
We have a true content creator, someone that really analyzes and brings content to life in a very engaging and, shall we say, award-winning way. Madison U. Tennandale, welcome to Who's on Content.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So excited for you to be here. And we're going to talk about all things content, but before we get into it, we always like to ask our guests, how do you define content?
That's a great question. I guess when I think of content, it's like it's a body of work or a piece of work that is expressive of the time and place that the creator is in.
That is expressive of the time and place that the creator...
That's how I think of content.
That's good, because we say content is everything, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the only influence or behavior, but to your point, the content of your life changes as you evolve.
Absolutely.
So the time and place of where you're at.
I also think because content to me is the distinction between like content and perhaps like a film or a song.
Yes, yes.
Is also in the fleeting nature of it. Yes. I think content is supposed to be temporary.
It is like a shark. It must keep moving.
Yeah, it's got to keep moving. Like when we think of, when people are like, was film content? I'm like, I don't think film's content. I don't consider film to be content.
You don't consider film to be content, but because it has a time, it kind of...
Yeah, but then at the same time, I think where I can acknowledge my own contradictions, I go back and forth of like, but I think TV is content.
Yes.
Right? Like there's, but can okay. we just accept that there's all these different nuances?
Two things can be true at the same time. The girls have to realize, and that the content of that.
Yes.
The content of that concept
yes.
is hard for people.
It is. Yeah.
It's like, he could be a good person, but he's also an asshole.
Totally.
And that's totally. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think we're trained, especially in the U.S., to have black and white thinking.
Yes.
That we really struggle with.
There like, is no gray.
There's it's no, like, but no, the gray is so important. Especially as content creators, right?
Like, yeah.
I think black and white is also what perpetuates the content creation of like perfectionism.
Yes.
And then on the other end.
Good like, content, bad content.
Yes. Like, is there even anything like, what is good, what is bad?
No, there is some bad content. And that bad content has entered the chat. And we're going to get into that. But right. what I want to get into is the content of you. Mm-hmm. And so how did you get into this space of using content to really tell stories? And not yeah. just your stories, but yeah. those of others.
You know, when I think about it, when I was 10 years old, my dad gave me a video camera as a like birthday gift. And my siblings and I and friends would just, I mean, I've... literally probably days of footage of us just making
around.
Bullshit. You know what I mean?
And but like that was like, that you were Spielberg.
Yeah.
You were Duvernay. Yeah. You was like, I am out here
yes.
doing the good work.
Yes. And then, you know, I remember getting my first Apple computer MacBook at the time and having iMovie on it. And that was like, what?
Boom. You was like, I'm here. I'm then here.
I'd be like, everyone needs to
sit down and watch this feature film.
Yes. So my journey to content really actually started at a very young age.
Okay. Were your parents in like a very entertainment content?
No, they're investment bankers. I swear they gave us the video camera to distract ourselves.
Yeah, because they're like, girl, we're trying to make some of these numbers.
They're like,
right.
We're just like, do yeah. something and we don't want you sitting in front of the TV all day.
Mm.
So it was like, they would give us books. They gave us a video camera. It was like, then I remember my mom buying me a sewing machine. I didn't actually want, you know
your
what I mean?
Your parents were basically giving you all these things to figure out what your tactical
yes.
skills, what are marketable skills these kids going to have?
Where are they going to shine?
An intellect, a movie director, how she might be a fashion designer.
Literally.
But that's content.
Yeah.
And it's good that they gave you the content of exploration. And I definitely think... toys is the first set of content that yeah. helps define people because we give yes. little boys airplanes and cars right. and little right. girls baby
Rare.
Dolls.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so your parents were like, nah.
Yeah, you know, I also think both my parents grew up in low-income households
mm-hmm.
and without any doubt pursued finance to create financial stability for themselves to not raise kids in the same type of environment they had.
Because the content of their life at that time was enough content for them to know, I can't give this content to
my children. And so I think for them, being a creative was not even within something tangible. They couldn't even think about that because their number one priority was
yeah.
get out of the situations that they were growing up in.
Yeah.
So I do believe this like push towards having kids who were creative
mm-hmm.
was an extension of them being like, do what I couldn't do.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Beautiful?
Like they weren't even thinking that creativity was an option for them because...
Right.
Their only goal was to make money and get out of their situation.
Because that was our parents' generation's content. But now we have the content of life.
Yeah.
Thanks to social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward, where was your first professional paying job where you were like, okay, I'm doing creative content
yeah.
work?
Yeah. So I would say where I actually was able to make an impact. Like I worked as an assistant job at HBO for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And I would say that like I definitely had moments of vocalization, but like anyone listening to this who pays attention to content, one of the few industries that truly is hierarchical is television.
Say that shit for
you
the
know
cheap
what
seats.
I mean? Like,
listen, the
everyone
girls don't know.
Starts as a production. There's no like, I'm gonna just be a director at HBO at 22 years old.
It's the same at the talent agencies. It's like, girl, you work in the mailroom.
Mail
you need to know every single piece of mail that comes
yes.
through here, every single person on the call sheet.
Yes.
But that, I just had this conversation with a publicist and I was like, you know, back then, say what you want. It was very toxic, but the framework of the training was clear.
Mm-hmm.
And now, yes, we should allow content to evolve, but the basis of the content is this is the training.
Yeah, right, 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 right.
There's certain shit you need to know in order to make great work.
Yeah, and that everyone has to start at the same level.
Everyone must start at the same level.
Mm-hmm. I think that, like, at this point, we do have enough education awareness that, like, the reality is that film and TV has also been called out by the fact that, like, you have people in the mailroom making $35,000 a year, and you're like, that's actually not a livable wage. Like, we need to move past this idea of, like, you got to start in the trenches. I made an impact in my own way.
Okay.
As an assistant at HBO, as an assistant at Milk Studios, but where I really think
what
I,
was
like,
that impact?
Just contributing, right? Like, speaking up in the writer's room in little ways that I, like, felt I could, considering the position I was in. But it was really when I left HBO to go to Refinery 29, which at the time was Refinery's, like, it was the heyday of BuzzFeed and Bustle and Vice.
Talk about it. When Refinery 29 hit the scene, there wasn't independent thinking, female-centric outlet that wasn't a digital spinoff of print versions of magazines.
Right, right, right.
And if it was a media platform that wasn't spun off from a print version of something, it focused on a lot of things to bring in a lot of eyeballs.
Yes.
And Refinery 29 was one of the first brands to really define what it meant to be a millennial-leaning media platform.
Yeah. And to their credit, and I know things have changed, but when I got there in 2015, Refinery was in the place where they had, no matter where you were, from an intern to an executive, if you had a creative idea, you could bring it to life if you were willing to do the grunt work of from getting it to A to Z.
Yeah.
So, like, I had an idea of creating a series about, at the time, also, why I couldn't find foundation concealer that fit my skin tone, right? This is pre-Fenty, y'all.
This is when
it was just, like, Bobbi Brown and, like, Maybelline.
Right, but listen, in years, we had to be reminded that Iman Cosmetics.
Yes. Yes.
She was available, but unfortunately, the content wasn't content. And so we weren't finding her.
100%. 100%. And for those people that are listening, they're like, is she 90? I'm 30 years old, right? So this was only in 2015, y'all.
Listen.
This was like not that long ago. But that was the place where I first really got the opportunity to produce, to direct, to star. And Refinery gave people the agency to do that. It's without any doubt, I credit that to being the time and place that gave me the courage to be creative.
The time and place that gave me the courage.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden I had this institution who was like, you have an idea?
Great.
As long as you want to direct, produce, and star it, here's $1,000. That's all you got. Make it happen. Cool.
What do you mean?
I was 24 years old. I'm like, oh my God. Like,
what the fuck about the...
Yes.
It was what? Probably 3 years after Instagram started?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just still a photo sharing platform?
And what was so cool about that is Refinery had this photo sharing for the whole company, like, you know, on your iPhone.
Yeah.
And you would submit photos throughout your day. However, whatever. You just would submit photos. And then if they chose your photo to put on the Instagram, this was the time when, like, that would happen.
Yeah.
And you'd get followers. You know what I
yes,
mean? Like,
yes.
Now no one gives a shit.
People be like, girl, what else?
I don't care.
Yeah.
Versus back then, a Refinery reposted your stuff and saw your content and that content resonated with people. People followed you.
Because back then, it's almost what is happening where there's been an influx of members-only clubs.
Yeah.
Right? Where people are paying a premium to be around quote-unquote like-minded individuals.
Mm.
And that is because, unfortunately, on social, the like-minded individuals have pulled back. And
now
so if
so
Refinery
mass,
is sharing you, it's like she's a part of their think tank. She's a part of this special club. But to your point, now everyone's special.
Everyone's special.
Everyone's got a TV show. Everyone's got a talk
There's
show.
So much
it's like nothing is special anymore.
No.
And so in a very crowded world, we're trying to create and go back to exclusivity.
Yeah.
Quality over quantity.
100%. I think that's the product of the fact that we've also lost so much community in our day-to-day lives, right?
We've lost so much community.
So content, I do believe, holds a lot of space for people to have community. I do think that still exists.
Yes.
But it's less precious, unfortunately. I think a couple years ago, these communities were rich.
Ooh. But now the echo chambers that exist online are a little scary because now people that want to discredit elections or think that global warming is not real, there are more and more people, American and non-American, that believe that.
Yeah.
So now we've globalized how we quote unquote connect.
Yeah.
and damage the communities locally.
Absolutely. Because of that. So true. I think we all, despite the, like whatever our lives look like and where we live and our socioeconomics, I think that I'd be damned that there's not one person on this earth who doesn't distrust content even a little bit now.
Oh,
I think
yes.
Even those, you and I, yeah, who do this.
We do this all day.
I'm still like a lot now.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Even more because I know the smoke and mirrors that happen behind it.
Yes. Yes. I'm like, this is not how, that's not really what's happening.
Like, this is not.
Or it's what we were talking about before we got started. Like, why are we moving so fast?
Why don't look over here now?
Yeah.
Look over here.
Yeah.
What's happening? The content is no longer rooted in anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the pressure's too high, right? Like, I think about how I have a TikTok. I love my TikTok. I love just scrolling. I'm not putting pressure on myself to create TikTok content.
Okay.
That's my relationship to TikTok.
I have not. I've tapped in a little bit just because this is what we
do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I have seen so many friends who are successful on TikTok burn out over and over again because the way that this platform has now been designed of creating so much content, 3 to 5 TikToks a day, that it's really not only diluted what is good content, but we've lost the reality that like human beings are still making this content and they're burning out.
Yes, yes.
It's not sustainable to make 3 to 5 TikToks a day.
No, because you still need to live real life.
Or do you, right? Like I think we are at this point where there are people who are not doing that anymore.
Yeah, it's like you are more popping online than you are in real life.
Yeah, so, but that's my biggest fear. Like the biggest insult to me would be someone being like, oh, you're way more interesting online. You know what I mean?
I would gag.
I would gag. I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Like, check please.
I'm like, what?
Right.
That's not a in my opinion, that's not a compliment.
It's not a compliment at all.
I'd much rather people be like, oh, I had no idea you were this engaging, intelligent, beautiful.
That's the one time you want to hear you're better in person.
Yes.
IRL is becoming so precious.
Yeah.
And so you do this content, you have this really career-altering moment to refine and gain skills.
Yeah.
Where do you go next?
So after that, I went to Museum of Ice Cream. I was...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I was their... I became a founding partner.
Talk about content.
Yeah.
A museum dedicated to ice cream.
Yeah, and I was their founding CMO, so head of social. So that whole, like, Instagram selfie museum, like, that was...
That
the
was
work.
You.
That was me. That was my work.
Yeah.
And...
Because there, before the Museum of Ice Cream, there
it didn't exist. No, and I lived and breathed that job. Like, I think that when I think about, so after what, the first year and a half, I was able to, we won the Webby. But I remember when the
Webby. And what did you win the Webby for? Let's not
Yeah, I won the Webby for the Museum of Ice Cream's social account in 2018, I think. 2018 or 2017.
And what does that even mean for someone that's like, wait, I thought you only get them for like, video content
is overall presence on social. So, but what was wild about the whole thing is it was both a blessing and a curse of an experience. Blessing in the sense that like I had put my blood, sweat, and tears into this job.
You saw where the sacrifice went.
Everything, relationships, friendships, moved multiple times around the country. Just like I was really a shell of a human at that point.
Yeah.
And so there was great validation that like that sacrifice was worth something. I say this to people all the time who ask me questions of like, I really want a Webby. I really want the Forbes 30 under 30. Like, how did you get those things? And I always say to them, like, would you believe me if I told you that those things actually don't really matter to me? And people are like, what do you mean? And I'm like, when I won that Webby, even though I'm on stage, I'm smiling, I was a shell of a human. I like that moment was beautiful. And then when I left that stage and went home, I was alone in that isolation again.
Yep.
And it didn't really mean much. And so you're like, the question is that if you're expecting to win these things, receive these awards, get 30 under 30 and feel different, if you yourself have not done the work on who you are, what you believe in, how you want to show up, then those things don't actually matter.
And so that space and place that you were in when you won the Webby, you were a shell of a person. But just like butterflies, caterpillars crystallize, and there's a shell that has to be broken.
Yeah.
And something new and beautiful emerges.
Yeah.
So from winning that award, understanding what it took to get there, you shed this shell and you're just like, yeah, I got this award, but I don't have any friends.
Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. No.
So now 100%. Where do you go and how does your content change and inform the content of your work?
Totally. Great question. Two things. One, I came to this realization. I mean, I've made this joke 1,000 times, but it's so true. Like, I'm severely lactose intolerant and I hate the color pink. And here I was winning this award about things don't give a shit about.
That almost went over my head when you said I'm severely like, yeah, milk
I don't
is
even
in fucking
eat
ice cream.
Stuff. I was going to ask you
how much ice cream were you eating if you worked at the museum?
And so it was this aha moment for me as I was like, okay, if I genuinely do not care about this.
Yeah.
And I'm able to produce and make content that's award-winning about something I don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? How do I feel? And what is that content if I pivot my own self-interest and self-worth rooted in things that I care about? So I left.
Rooted in things I care about.
And in self-worth.
And that goes back to what we said. It's like the flowers of people's content are not rooted
100%.
In anything.
And people, and you know, one thing I also like, I call attention to is when I was leaving and I was like, I'm leaving. People are like, are you crazy? Why would you leave? You just launched a line at Sephora.
You know, that is the most bad ass move. People don't realize.
You got to leave when you have momentum.
You got to leave when you have momentum. And when the girls think you would never like.
Yes.
You'd be like, no, bitch, it's that good. Yes. And I want to see what else is out there.
Yes.
I am betting on myself.
Me. When the year I left, it was the year of just dedication to Madison.
Oh,
and figuring
God.
Out who I was and what did it mean to actually create content that was relatable to me. I was in Museum of Ice Cream, was a very white space.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I don't want to make content
for white people.
For white people. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, what does it mean for me to make content for black people? What does it mean for me to like start my own business and have that inclusivity and diversity top of mind? What does it mean to actually love myself and then create content that's representative of what that new phase in my life looks like and feels like?
Girl, you preaching at that, child.
And so I left and I spent a year of just consulting and exploration. Yep. And then I started my own firm. And I also say this, I got Forbes 30 under 30, not for Museum of Ice Cream. I got 30 under 30 for starting my firm that I have now, which is a predominantly POC, all-female identifying design studio.
And I want you to say that one more time because I need people to understand the content of that context.
Yeah.
So
it's
you
so
got
important.
30 under 30 for your own company.
Own company filled with beautiful, talented, female-identifying individuals, and majority black women.
Creating content. And I think people become so consumed with the content of their job title.
Yeah, right.
And the content of the corporation or company they work for.
Mm-hmm.
They lose themselves just like you did.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, this is my job. But when you come out of it, it's like, what is the content of me?
Yeah. It's also like, we don't have to understand our fears. We have to act despite them.
We don't have to understand our fears. We have to act despite.
You know what I mean?
Girl,
like, people are
you've
like,
been dropping gems. What did Oprah say when she's like, tweet, tweet? That's a tweet, tweet. Like,
but it's true,
it's
right?
True,
like,
though.
I left Museum of Ice Cream having no fucking clue what I was doing.
Scared as shit. Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
I didn't understand. Really, I knew I needed to leave, but if you had sat, because I was such a shell of an individual at that time, if you had really sat me down and said, hey, Madison, like, what's really going on? How do you really feel? I probably would have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
we all know that shit.
You know that feeling?
You kind of cry, go outside because you're just trying to keep your shit together.
Yeah, like, that's where
you're
I was.
One bad day from a total fucking meltdown.
Literally.
Like, but you're
that's
on
where
that
I was.
Brink.
That's I didn't understand what was happening.
But on the brink of breakdown is where there's a breakthrough.
But that's why you have to act despite that fear.
You have to act despite that fear.
You know
fear.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think people think that they have to understand everything before they make a decision.
Yeah.
Not always.
No.
Fear is one of those things that I don't think we really ever truly understand. But it's a knowing. You know deep down that you, even if the worst thing happens, you will be okay. Right?
And like, so the worst thing of someone like you, a black woman, in a space where it is still so hard for black women to tell stories for black women and be honored and awarded on that, you go out and say, fuck all this, and create content. And who are the brands that are taking a chance?
Yeah. The first brand that really took a bet on us and me was Milk Bar and Christina Tosi.
Amazing.
I think she saw, obviously.
That fucking cake was slamming.
So good. a lot of relevant experience, right?
Yeah. We're she's having like, girl, just, if you did ice cream, you can do cakes.
But what she also understood, and even though she's a white woman, what she understood, there's such a misconception that like the culinary industry is female. I'm like, it's predominantly straight men.
Yeah.
Yeah. she made a name for herself in that space.
Yes.
And so she was really dedicated to empowering women as much as possible.
Yes.
Because she really does understand what it means to be the only female identifying individual.
Yep.
In a very straight male world.
The only, yeah.
And so here she saw me trying to build this creative studio as a woman in a space that's like majority straight middle-aged white men. And yeah. She was like...
And a bunch of bros that report into
Silicon
them.
Silicon Valley bros. And she was like, come here.
Oh, I love that.
And so I credit Christina for that first. I credit Van Deer, which was like another company took a huge bet in the beginning. And then I would say the first like talent, like big celebrity that took like a bet on us was Halsey took a huge bet on us by hiring us. We were like a year into the business to do her beauty brand.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So she took a huge bet on us. And I'm so grateful. Everyone who believes in us and saw the mission, knowing that like we were still figuring our shit out, I'm like forever grateful.
And so you win your first Webby.
Mm-hmm. It was two that same year.
So you won both your Webbies for
Museum of Ice Cream.
So the first one was for social presence overall. Mm-hmm. What was the second one?
The second was art and culture fan favorite. So that was like a public sourced voting.
Love it.
One. Yeah.
And so here's the $1 billion question.
Yeah.
You've done it for others.
Yeah.
Is the pressure on to do it for yourself?
Yes.
Knowing everything that you know now.
Yeah, sure, sure. I think the pressure was on, but where I feel like I've done a lot of the work and where I feel very validated in doing it for myself now and seeing success is one, like things in areas you can't measure, right? So the messages I get privately from Black women being like, I'm going to pursue design in school because agencies like you exist.
Yes.
Or people who see me speak and they're like, they message and it's somebody who has a different experience from me. I just gave a speech and a queer man from Israel came up to me and he was like, you have no idea how much I see myself in what you were just talking about because like I don't fit into that like straight middle-aged white American male space either.
Yeah.
Those, I have goosebumps saying that. But
yeah,
like,
yeah, I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah, like those are the things I can't measure that like
because validate. That is the service.
That's, yes. And then the content that we probably are most well known for now than where I believe that like where the 30 under 30 ended up coming from or where like we were able to succeed and I was able to receive that accolade was we started producing content in the middle of the pandemic, specifically around George Floyd, educating, using design and education, pairing them together on social to explain what was really happening.
You were creating edutaining content.
Exactly. So there's an asset we did in July 2020 where it was like, what is Juneteenth? And it's just a simple white and blue asset, but really minimalistic. And it's three slides of explaining what Juneteenth is from the perspective of a person of color. I mean, it got all the Jenners and Kardashians reposted that shit. That took a life of its own.
You're like, the fuck?
I was like, whoa. Yes. That was the first time I experienced something like that to that scale.
Yeah.
But it validated everything that I had been searching for.
It was a perfect storm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone needed that content.
Yes.
They needed something other than the death. But then they needed to understand why we were celebrating.
Why we were there. Mm-hmm.
Because they're polar opposites.
Yeah. Yeah. But it validates to anyone questioning if substantive content can become viral, if substantive content can be seen by some of the world's biggest talent, if substantive content can get you a 30 and a 30, the answer is yes.
And that is why all content is not created equal. And
right.
So to your point, there is something that's humbling about actually the content of work.
Yes. Yes. And I think we've enough knowledge to understand that hard work doesn't mean abuse. Hard work doesn't mean making someone sit at a desk for 12 hours, even though they like should go home and they're making below minimum wage. All of those things that like were a part of our growing up as creatives that were
like
required.
The content has changed that
this
no longer
matters.
You don't need
to do all of that, right?
That was the content pre-pandemic is different from the content post-pandemic.
Yeah.
And so for you, the content that you created during the pandemic propelled you and your work. And where now does your content ethos lie?
Yeah, that's a great... You know, so I've made a big pivot in my relationship to content in this year alone.
Okay.
Where I've decided that we're no longer doing social media content within the business.
Okay.
I'm only doing it for myself.
I love it.
So I've taken away the pressure that I believe that social media... as a business, and if you are on the business side of social media and you're working for a brand, there's a education gap Yep. If you're not in the industry of understanding that, like, these institutions, Metas and Twitters and TikToks, it's unsustainable for content creators and people who are working on the business side to actually scale and grow accounts in the way that we used to be.
Yeah.
And it's an unhealthy pressure that I was just like, I'm not, I actually want to still enjoy this.
You're like, I'm good.
Yeah, so I'm just going to do this for fun now.
Yeah.
So my relationship to content is that, like, no more social media strategy. If you go onto our website, it says social media department is closed.
Yes.
Closed for business?
She's closed for business. She no longer lives on this block. Stop circling the block on that.
Nope.
Showing
but we're just now exclusively a design and branding studio, which is what we always did. We always were 50-50.
Yeah.
But now we're 100% design and branding. And everyone's so much happier. And yeah. I'm so much happier.
And so you basically design and build the vehicle.
Yeah.
And from there you say, take this vehicle wherever
exactly.
it shall go.
Yeah. And I'm going back to the old school way of content creation, in the sense of, like, we design a brand, we do their whole packaging identity, and then we'll do a photo shoot.
Yeah.
And we'll actually, like, what? Why do we now have 100 selects? You used to have 3 selects that would be your campaign, and that was it.
Because you need the email content, you need digital content, you need out of home. It's like, girl.
It's crazy.
It's so crazy. Like, you're like, we're going to do 3 hero images.
And that's
it. And they're going to run everywhere.
Yes. I want to alleviate this unnecessary, unsustainable pressure that we put on creatives to do the most all the time.
Ugh.
That is just unsustainable for us. It's just, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No sense.
I've gotten to the point where I'm, like, so obsessed with, like, not doing that and not contributing to this, like, go hard work culture anymore. I'm out here reading books about the Industrial Revolution, okay?
Listen, this is a perfect segue because we have reached a portion of the show that's called Rapid Fire. I'm gonna ask you 4 questions.
You okay?
After each question, I'm gonna ask you who's on content.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a platform or a content creator, just your Industrial Revolution book could be on
content
for one of these questions. You ready?
Cool.
Okay. Your favorite form of content, who's on content?
At this exact documentary film.
Documentary film, what are you watching?
It was about this graphic designer who designed all the logos from, like, Jaws to 007
oh,
to Manhattan.
Shit.
One man designed, like,
coins.
All of the most iconic film and television yeah. logos of, like, a 30-year period, Joe Karoff. I thought that was fascinating how one person was able to execute some of the most iconic...
Oh, I'm going to have to watch this.
...film.
Okay. Documentary films. You need a reset. Who's on content?
I need a reset. Who's on content? Like, what... I listening to Glennon Doyle's podcast is my guilty pleasure.
I love it.
I love it. That's my reset. You can scroll through and find any subject that you're like, oh shit, I'm going through
something.
I'm about
something. To get worked.
Click.
Glenn Doyle will work your ass. And you be like, whoop. All right.
Yes.
Let me get back to it.
Oh my God. That's like, I love it. I love it.
You need to be inspired. Who's on content?
I need to be inspired. Who's on content? I have 2 answers to that. One is, I think Edward Edinfull is
one. Oh my God. Get that man. The content of him being so unsure of himself in the September issue
yeah.
to now the content of him completely redefining
yeah.
British Vogue.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
In a space and place where they were not fucking with black people.
Unbelievable.
Like, you talking about the content.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
content is content-y all around.
Always. And every fucking issue. Forever and always.
Forever and always. Shout out to Edward.
He is an individual is inspiring. How he shows up in the world is inspiring.
Yes.
And then everything that he's a part of, where he's not even front facing, is inspiring.
Inspiring.
The creative decisions that you know he's making and the operations he has to be running in order to sustain
yes.
that quality of work
Ugh.
By a group of creatives time and time again.
Chef's kiss, sir.
Always.
Okay, so that's one.
Yeah.
You said.
The second one is, I mean, like, this is where I go back to my roots of social, of, like, if I really need to be inspired, I, like, sometimes just need to go and, like, we are the urban, or, like,
yes,
you know what I
yes.
mean?
Yes, embracing, like, culture.
Yes.
Black Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, all of the places, spaces
yes.
and places that show just, like, ratchet black people shit
yes.
to
yes.
dope black people. You be like, yes. ooh, okay, okay.
Yes.
Ooh.
And
okay,
just
my,
like,
people, yes, it is innately within us.
Exactly.
Ooh, it's like literally going back to the watering
yes.
hole and be like,
yes.
oh shit, I need some of this Wakanda
just
magic.
Seeing...
Give me the vibranium.
Yes. Yes. Seeing black people be happy. I guess there's one more in that, like, getting out into the world. It's like
yes.
going to museum.
Community.
Yeah, just like seeing art.
Yes.
And an experience in, like, an IRL form, you know?
Yes, I love,
like,
that.
Like, all of these things that get us off of our phone
yep.
is inspiring to me.
Last rapid fire.
Mm-hmm.
You need to feel joy. Who's on content?
I mean, I was, it's a, almost a bit of what I just said in terms of like going onto, you know,
yes,
Instagram. Because it's inspiring. Seeing
Black Joy is inspiring.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like rewatching old films for me.
Yes.
Just watching things that have inspired me throughout my life for different reasons.
Ooh, I love
right?
that.
Like rewatching Love and Basketball, because I remember as a kid being like, this is Black Love.
Black Love. Yes.
You know what I mean? And getting really engaged to watching just like a movie I watched when I was in college called The Beginners, which is like a Mike Mills movie mm-hmm. with Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer. And it's about his father comes out at 75.
Wow.
And it's about him navigating his dad coming out yeah. as a senior citizen. And it's so heartwarming.
I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah. And it's sad and heartwarming and it's layered. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Going back into the archives and watching things.
I love that. Okay. Final question. Mm-hmm. We've talked about all these different things, echo chambers and community is fleeting, content not being rooted in anything, doing shit when you're afraid as fuck you're going to fail. Yeah. What is the future of our industry as we think about creative burnout is real mm-hmm. and the more platforms that burn out, mm-hmm. the more creators that will burn out from trying mm-hmm. to keep up with what is engaging on a burning platform?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the first step is that it's a responsibility of all of us as people to actually recognize that like, burnout is real.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've made a lot of progress, but I don't know if employers really still understand that this is real.
Yeah.
That these systems that we put into place and these demands that we have on people is unsustainable, because we're also asking people to not only work so hard and produce mm-hmm. so much content, but we're asking them to do that simultaneously with just living in this world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not acclimated societally to understand.
We're still trying to figure out this new space.
Yes.
Anything pre-2020 don't exist.
Yes. Yes.
We're 2 years into life now.
Yes. And so I think that like we have a lot of work to do of recognizing that these things are real. But I think it's a responsibility of us as content creators.
Mm-hmm.
This is a controversial thing to say, not everyone agrees with me, but that some extent burnout is a choice, right?
Oh, like, absolutely.
If we don't learn how to create boundaries, if we don't learn how to say
stop being the martyr.
You know what I mean? If everyone stopped producing 3 to 5 TikToks a day, then eventually TikTok would stop requiring that,
yeah.
right? Like we have to have agency.
Stop feeding the beast.
You know, when I see creatives who are killing themselves, I'm like, the reality is, it's like you have agency. I have to, I mean, trust me, it's hard for me. I got post-its all over my damn house being like,
it's being Mary Jane.
Burnout
girl.
Is a choice,
yes,
Madison.
Bitch.
Like, protect your peace. Like, stand up for your boundaries. Mm-hmm. But like, these things are really important. I think that it's easier to blame institutions and not
blame ourselves.
But like, as creatives and content creators, like,
yeah.
Hey guys,
we've
we
created
gotta
a society
have agency
where
in
you
this.
Can place blame for your choices on other people but 100%. Yourselves.
And like content, we have agency. We have to acknowledge that we're overworking ourselves.
Yes, you're creating the content, honey.
Yeah.
You say stop.
So it's not just on the apps.
Yeah.
You know, like it's also on us to be like, I'm going to create some boundaries here. I'm also not going to put my entire self-worth on some troll's comment.
Exactly.
And have it ruin my month. I'm like, no, y'all. I'm out here. I block people all the time. I don't give a shit.
Send that shit right to the block party. Bye,
I'm
bitch.
Like, they're like, I'm
I don't
like,
go back and forth. Two places we're never going in life, back and forth. Like, I'm going to go a lot of places, two places, back and forth, bitch.
Not happening. Dead.
Done.
Dead. Also, just like, in the same way that you're not just going to let a random person into your house from the street, you can think of your social channels like that. I actually, like, really value the dynamic and the conversation of dialogue on my social channels. If someone's just breaking through my front door by saying something nasty and rooted in like whatever,
I'm
like, get out of here. Blocked.
Yes. I fucking love that, Madison. You are a force. You truly are way more interesting in person. And I thank you for your service through the content you're creating, not just for our community, but for yourself.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining us.
This was so fun. I just want to say that like this was one of the most original podcasts I've ever been on, and thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah, I mean,
like,
it's called Who's on
really
Content.
Really incredible questions. So thoughtful, so unique. You're onto something.
Thank you. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to follow us at The Real DBA and give us a rating and leave us a review. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.